Welcome to Geeks of North, a hobby and gaming podcast in La Belle Province. This week I'm here with the guys and we're talking about 8th edition 40K. So why don't you sit back, relax, grab a paintbrush, and enjoy the show. Hey everyone, welcome to this week's episode of Geeks of the North. As always, I'm your host, Paul Filio, here this week with my co-host, Antoine Bergeron.
Hello.
B. Steve.
Good evening.
And Yom Le Machine.
Hello.
Steve, this is radio. They can't see you waving.
I know, but it was for you guys, so...
Okay. Well, hi, Steve.
Hi, Paul. Hi, Antoine. Hi, Guillaume. But Guillaume is not looking at us. He's looking at a model.
Guillaume is busy trying to hobby.
Yeah.
Can never stop.
Like his hobby progress isn't long enough. He's going to add more while he's recording. All right. So, pretty interesting episode this time. We're going to be talking about some 40K. And it's got its dirty hooks in all of us again.
Yeah.
Well, at least three of us. One of us is resisting pretty well.
Resistant to Scuta.
But we shall see. Yeah. We'll drag him in, kicking and screaming. All right. So as always, we get to the full show here. So we've got a couple little parts of the business to talk about. And then we get to the cool stuff on the web. And then we're going to go into our hobby time and games we played. And then we'll take a quick break. And then we'll come back and talk about our main topic, 8th edition. 40K 8th edition, that is. So I guess we'll get this started. And we'll talk some business. Antoine, the business.
So, first up, we did that in the past. We started working on our YouTube channel to post the episodes, but it wasn't really something we were
actively doing.
Yeah, that's better. So, we started doing that actively. So, all the new show are going up when they are released, and we are slowly going back through the back catalog and posting them, starting with the episodes that are more timeless, like those aren't event reviews or game release
like interviews and
more
stuff,
than
right?
A year away, like the brush topic maybe, or bases topic, or interviews for non-Kickstarter related stuff. So
yeah, exactly.
It's up. We'll have a link in the show notes, but it's also available. There's a link on the right-hand side of the website at all time. So if you prefer to listen while watching YouTube instead of through your podcatcher of note, it's available for you. You just have to subscribe to the channel and you'll get notified when we release a new episode.
Very cool.
Might, and I say might, release other stuff. We've talked about that for years now, so we'll see how that goes along. But yeah, at least you'll
we're pretty
get
bad
the,
at that.
you'll get the audio only part.
The ideas are there. It's the time and the motivation that seem to be lacking.
I don't think
mostly
motivation.
Time.
Yeah, motivation I think it's mostly time. Yeah.
Motivation is my problem. The rest of you may be motivated. I'm not terribly motivated. But definitely time is an issue as well. What can you do? Sadly, you can't live off podcasting. And you really can't live off podcasting once every 3 months the way we do it. So, all right. Yeah. Well, you know, we can't all be, Chris and produce tons of content all the time. All right. I think there's a second part of the business, was there not, Antoine?
Yeah, I was waiting for you to introduce it.
Okay,
so
well,
I'll go.
Consider it introed.
So this is the Amazon affiliate link. So we have now registered as affiliates on Amazon. So there is a link on the right-hand side, again, of the website, and we'll try to make a shortened version, easier to remember, available. So how it works, if you go through that link before buying something on Amazon, we'll get a small redevance there that won't cost you a penny. It just give us back some small percentage of your the buy you'd made there, and it helped the podcast because you will be able to buy new equipment or upgrade equipment we already have and stuff like that. So it's pay a someone small to edit help to us.
Or help you found a new found a new 40k army. One that you would like.
Yeah, help Antoine find a 40k army to play. That's the goal.
And I have one right there just behind me.
You don't like it, that's different.
No, he's not with his guitar.
I have one that I like, but it's on in boxes. I won't play that. And it's all in parts.
Also, with the affiliate link, it gives us a bit of kickback, but we don't see the purchase. So feel free to make any weird purchases on Amazon. We won't see what you're buying. You're just encouraging the podcast.
Be honest, that's not true. So if you buy weird porn or stuff like that, we will know.
Oh, really? I thought we didn't see the item.
But we'll be too polite to say anything. the buyer to the item, but we can know what was bought.
Oh, well, that's awesome. So we could try to
We can guess who bought that strange stuff.
Buy weird stuff and mention it on the episode at one point.
Yeah, every couple episodes mention the weirdest thing.
Yeah,
that
weird
was bought.
Stuff bought on Amazon by our listener. That could be like part of the show, like cool stuff. On
one
the
gallon
web.
Jug section, of Astroglide or something.
Yeah, new section. Weird stuff that was bought. So go ahead, guys. Buy some stuff and buy the weirdest stuff for us to
Steve.
Have a new segment on the show.
And I can so see Steve buying something weird just to have something to talk about in a future show.
I was thinking the same
if
thing.
If it's food, it's Steve. So
no, actually, they don't deliver food here.
Not in Canada.
Not in Canada. Soon. We're really restricted inside of Amazon.
Says Steve.
All right, dead air. Excellent. Okay. If you can click the affiliate link, it helps us out. Costs you nothing. Support us so we can continue doing this. We'll continue doing it anyway, but a little support never hurts.
Yeah.
All right. Cool stuff on the web. I see two in the list, Antoine.
One for this week.
Okay.
So first
one. Pick one.
Yeah. We'll be tabletop audio. So this is a big library of advertising free and free to use audio background. Pretty long tracks that are looping too, and you can set the mood for a game. That's useful. I see it being more useful for RPGs, but even for there's one of a soccer field or something like that that could fit for a guild ball game, and all type of weird sounds that could fit for most game to add some
decorum,
background and color to your game. To your game sessions.
And see, this is a segue with the previous topic, with the weird stuff you can find on Amazon and background.
What I love is the fact that I'm just scrolling through the list of audio tracks, and there's one called Lucha Libre, and of course it's masked wrestling background sounds.
Yeah, that's just one of the one that sounds good for sport events. I listen to most of them, I must be honest. Not the old tracks, but parts, just to sample them. They're really good. They're well made.
That's so funny. Man, the stuff people come up with.
Yeah. I think I saw them on Kickstarter, but I'm not sure. Like, years ago, maybe, when it started. Or I might be misremembering with another similar item. Not too sure.
It's pretty awesome, though.
Yeah, I like the idea.
Yeah.
It's cool.
You can listen right there on the website. And if I remember, you can also download the files to your phone or any type of listening device you have.
It's an interesting concept. I mean, we've seen stuff like that before for years, different companies, but this seems to have such a huge selection of stuff. That's pretty awesome. Almost makes me want to get some RPGing going on. Almost. Oh, need more time.
Thinking also.
Yeah. Need more time. Oh, well. Speaking of time, hobby time. Okay, so I haven't been doing that much. Would you like that segue, Yom?
That's a great segue. I wasn't the one laughing, but
no, I laughed.
Oh, I thought it was you because my camera seems to be stuck on Yom for some reason.
I think Yom laughed, but not audibly. I did audibly.
Okay, because I heard someone laugh. I saw Yom's eyebrows go up, like a facial expression change, but I can't see his mouth because his lamp is right in front of it. So all I saw was his eyebrows, and I heard a laugh, so I assumed it was him. All right. Hobby time. So I've been building dreadnoughts because we started playing 40K, and I've had a love of dreadnoughts, and I have like 9 of them. So, yay, dreadnoughts. So I've been working on some of those. Also, I had a shelf fall over, and a bunch of stuff broke. So I've been doing some terrain repair and some model repair.
Boom.
Always fun.
Yeah, that's it.
One thing about dreadnoughts. Steve and I've had this discussion before. Steve, you remember the lovely instructions that came with the Imperial Guard Valkyries?
Yeah.
Right? The fact they had no writing anywhere and no part numbers?
The dreadnoughts are the same?
Yeah, apparently, well, at least my ironclads are. It's the same, like, here's a bunch of pictures. We won't tell you which part goes where. They're shaped differently. Look at the picture and hope you can figure it out. Yeah. So, luckily, dreadnoughts aren't a whole ton of parts. So, it's just a couple little things, like the missile launchers on the shoulders. But,
they're from the same
time, generation.
Yeah. Same release. Time frame release.
Yeah. Yeah. So, fun stuff. And that's really all I've done for hobby. I haven't had much time to do anything else. I was alone with the kids. My wife was away on vacation. So, it's hard to paint a hobby with a small child running around trying to help. And any free time I did have, I was kind of playing 40K. So I played 3 games of 40K starting on the Saturday before launch. Or the Saturday of launch, I guess.
No, before.
Wait, no, it was the week before. It was the week before launch. Yeah, I'm sorry. So we played 2 games in one day. I played against Steve's Imperial Guard. And I'll let him regale you all with the story of how he crushed me. And then I played against... and I was playing Grey Knights. A very small task force of Grey Knights. We played 1,000-point games, so it wasn't a huge force. I had like 17 or 18 models. 2 5-man squads with Psy Cannons. A Nemesis Dread Knight with a Silencer and a Psy Cannon. And a Venerable Dreadnought with 2 Twin-Linked Autocannons. Well, I guess Twin Autocannons, because Twin-Link doesn't exist anymore. And then I had Brother Captain Stern and a unit of Terminators. So, very low model count. And it didn't do so well against Steve. And then I played Antoine, and it did better. Mostly because I realized that possibly psychic powers are kind of broken. In large numbers. And that was about it. Oh, wait, no, sorry. I played one other game against... I can talk about this one because no one else on this podcast was there. I played against 80% G. So it was my Sisters of Battle that I pulled out of Mothballs and played against his orcs. And I lost. We had a lot of fun, though. One thing I've discovered is that orc Defcoptas are brutal. I don't know what GW was thinking. They may have been on drugs at the time, but I cannot confirm this. Because those models are insane.
They're even better than you thought. We discovered something else about them after that. Want me to tell you right now?
Sure.
Well, it's related to the rules, so I don't know if it's the time or place, but... you know, they fly. A model would fly that disengage can still shoot.
Shoot, yeah.
So they can drop bombs and shoot.
Yeah, I know.
That's a...
Okay, well, that's not a revelation to me, but... Okay.
I thought it was strong before that, before knowing that. So.
Well, the only thing we forget about flying is that I forgot that I have a -1 to hit them, because they're flying.
No.
No, it needs to say it in the entry on the data sheet,
yeah.
The -1. It's not against everything.
It's not automatic.
Oh, I thought that was part of fly.
Okay. No, only the one that are supersonic flyer, those that have a minimum movement.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Only those have that rule.
Like Stormraven, Valkyries, other stuff that's probably
that's
bombers or stuff like that.
Yeah, probably like the WAS bomb, blasted jets and stuff.
Yeah, the aircraft.
All those fun things. All right, cool. Yeah, so it was a great game. I mean, pulling my sisters out and not feeling horribly underpowered with them was pretty awesome. And we'll talk more about it in the 40K section. But it was a good game, lots of fun. Antoine, what about you, buddy?
I haven't been doing much either. Lots of work, lots of stuff family-wise.
This is going to be a boring podcast if none of us is doing anything.
Yeah. Well, I don't think so. It just means that section is quicker and can talk more about 40K. It
leaves more room for Yom.
Yeah, so I assembled my meat thresher. Partly assembled. It's all that needed to be glued is glued, and it's waiting for painting because some parts will be too much of a pain to paint if they are not if they are glued already. So that's done. And after that, I've been working on a Dark Eldar Archon conversion. I mentioned it, I think, in the last episode. A conversion with the Captain Arlok team. So it's a pretty not fitting, but pretty exact representation of a picture online. So that was provided by the client. So I'm trying to replicate it as better as I can. The only part that will really still look Dark Eldari is the weapons. So I won't be modifying those, but the pose has been changed. All the spikes, everything has been cleaned off the model. So I'm just rebuilding over it, reposing and resculpting everything except the weapons. He has a pistol and a sword. So I'm working slowly on that. The good thing about that is as it's sculpting, I can do that on my commute. I have a pretty long commute by train, which is pretty smooth. So I have a small travel kit for my sculpting and I can do that in the commute and also during my lunch break at work. So I can work like small parts every day at least. Oh, even if I don't have evening time, I do still advance the sculpting.
I saw the picture of your travel kit and I thought it was while you were going like to your parents or sister's place or stuff like that. I didn't think it was while you were going to work. That's nice.
Yeah. I have a commute of 50 minutes sat down in the train both ways. So it's a pretty good time to work on something like that.
Antoine's a machine.
Yeah, geeking out in the public transport. That's cool.
Yeah, it was. I started later than I wanted because all the gluing and the shaving part was with an X-Acto and small pieces that I tend to drop. So that was not the right place to do it. But once the core frame was done and I was up to the putty, I've been able to start that last week. So it's been advancing pretty well. I'm pretty happy where it is right now. And I must continue starting from the feet up. So right now, he has nice legs and boots.
Well, it's always important to start with the legs and boots. I mean, accessories are important, Antoine.
Yeah. So that's it for Obi. That's about the only thing I did. On the game side, I've played a couple of games of Pulp City, one with 80% G, which was more of a, not really a demo, but bringing him back to speed because the only game he played was a demo when the new edition was released.
Yep. Against me.
Against you. Yeah. At TempoCon, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So he has played his Grim. I've played my Ark because I have more monkeys painted than anything else. So. I play those. It was fun. I think we mentioned that in the last cast that playing with 80% G would be fun because of all the cinematic that would go with it. And that was exactly the case.
You did not disappoint.
Nope, not at all. So it was fun. And I played also a game with Mark, one of my more regular opponents with Pulp City. And the good thing is it's really clear that we are getting used to the rules and the models because we played a lot faster. One of the drawbacks we found early was that the game can be a bit slow, But it was mostly us getting used to it, because right now we can fly through our turns. So it's cool, because playing faster with a game that fast paced anyway, the action on the table is fast paced and we can play fast. So it makes for really a cinematic event. So it was another good game. I was playing my Ark again, and he was playing his heavy metal. He made a new table just for that game, which looked pretty cool. It was like a destroy industrial complex. So it was pretty cool. Really nice game. And lastly, well, I played the 40K with Paul. So my Tau against his Grey Knight. I say Tau, but it was, I think I had more Croots than anything in the
list. Yeah, you had a lot of Croot.
Yeah. They don't take up a big percentage of the points over the 1,000 points we were playing, but they take a huge percentage of the models.
Yeah.
And it didn't really go well, but I made some pretty poor decision during the game, and we forgot some stuff, like Smite having to target the closest target.
Closest unit, yeah.
Closest unit. So that made for some really good sniping with Smite of my Amaret. Which was not intended. So
yeah.
He might have survived maybe a turn more, but probably not. Everything was destroyed anyway, so it would have made even one more shot with it would probably not have made any big difference over the whole game. And that's about it. Well, I'll wait to for my comment about that when we go over 40K itself. And the only last thing I want to mention isn't a tabletop game, but I've been playing Faeria. That's how I would pronounce this in French. Pretty similar in English.
Faeria.
So it's a desktop game, but that's been ported to mobile recently. Think of Hearthstone, but instead of playing just cards against cards, you have a board where you summon your stuff on. So you summon islands and you summon your creature and you have tactical movement on top of playing Hearthstone. So it's pretty interesting. I've been playing a lot of that once again during my commute and bathroom time. So at least it's not stealing time of other game, of other hobby.
That's pretty cool. Oh, and it's free to play.
Yeah, free desktop. To play. So you can buy card packs and stuff like that, or unlock some options by playing. A lot of those are aesthetic options anyway. So, but I don't bother. I never play pay for a pay-to-play game. Just play the free part. And just the free part is already enough. Like every day you get new challenge, you get new coins for what they call their Pandora system, which is a draft system. So you can play draft every day. They have like a practice draft, and after that, a serious draft when you've played three practice. And depending on if you play against a computer or against live opponents, you get better treasures at the end. Either more gold or card packs or stuff like that to unlock, to create your own decks. So I'm starting to create my own decks instead of using the predefined decks that they offer that you can unlock, because they have the basic decks, but they also, you have more advanced decks that you can unlock as your card, as you get new cards in your packs, which are pre-built with, and supposed to be better than what you would come up at the start, which I think it's the case, because my custom decks I've been doing pretty poorly. Yeah, but, I like it a lot. I played Hearthstone quite intensely when I got into it, and it fell off after some time. I'm pretty sure I'll do the same thing with Faeria. I never stay interested long enough to be a master of anything, but except of being a jack of all trades. So, but
you play
for
Pokemon
now,
still,
yeah, but. I have a lot of it, but my stuff is not high level. I'm not doing well in gyms and stuff like that. So, and that's more to play with Theodore anyway. So,
okay. Mm-hmm. Sure it is.
Yeah, I say that to myself too, Antoine. That's okay.
Yeah, yeah. Talk to the guy who's a lot higher level than me.
To play with Theodore, Steve?
No, to play with my daughters. Actually, most of the time I say, who wants the phone to play while I'm driving? And they start arguing. So screw that. I keep the phone in front of the car. And that's it.
Yeah. So that's it for me. How about you, Steve?
Well, for Abby, I got some new release for the Hunters for Guild Ball. So they finally got this tree upgrade. So I painted those up. They were lovely models, really fun to paint. And I'm almost done with those. I have one to finish and another limited edition Terran I picked up as well during another sale. And they were quite fun to paint. And also, I don't know if, well, it's kind of a hobby. I digged up all my 40k in the closet. That was quite an adventure trying to figure out what I had, what I could do for my, the games we were going to play, our intro games. So that's pretty much it for hobby. As for gaming, I went to two Guild Ball tournaments, one at the beginner and one at the FDB in Gatineau. The one at the beginner, we were 12 or 13, something like that. And it was a nice showing. It was six people from the Gatineau area who came to play. And I finished second with my Hunters. And then it was 2 weeks after, I went to the one in Gatineau with Philippe Poupard. And I didn't fare well. I finished like six or seven out of, again, 12 people. So nice showing, and was pretty fun. And the one at Gatineau, I won best gold with the tackle ball you printed for me.
Nice.
It won best gold by one vote. So thanks, Paul.
It's all about the taco.
Yeah, it is. I miss Taco Bell. It's been a long time, actually, I've had Taco Bell.
What, you were at my house just a couple weeks ago, Steve. You could grab Taco Bell. It's right around the corner.
I know. I could have got some just for a snack in the afternoon. I didn't think about it.
Yeah, mid-afternoon tacos.
Oh, anytime is good for tacos. So there's no problem at all. I could eat tacos for breakfast. Actually, I did. Well, they have breakfast in Taco Bell in the States. Which we
yes,
don't.
Steve. I know, Steve.
Sadly, we don't have them.
I've been to the States with you, Steve. I'm aware. I'm aware.
And as well for gaming, well, I had two games of 40k, 1,000 point game, one against Paul and one against Guillaume. And game against Paul was a more all-round list. Well, mostly mechanized, though.
I was going to say all-around list. Jeez.
Yeah, it was. Well, I had troops. They were in Chimeras. I had a couple of artilleries. I had a command group. It was, and rattling snipers.
Yeah.
It was pretty balanced.
It was more mixed arms. That's true.
Yeah. It was like, because I didn't know, because you have so many armies, I didn't know what you were going to field. So I just wanted to be prepared for whatever you could pull out of your app. Because, whoop, surprise. I have an army, so I didn't know. So I wanted something like balance. And against Yom, it was all tanks list led by Commander Pass. So it was all Demon Rusts and one Manticore. It was pretty fun.
Yeah, those Manticores are brutal.
Yeah, I didn't know.
Yeah, they are.
They were that good. They look good on paper, but in game, they're really, really good.
And facing a tank company, all toughness 8 is rough. It's really, really rough.
Says the guy that won that game anyway.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, but, yeah.
Well, because it ended early.
Yeah.
Because he didn't have any, yet what, only the
handful Thermagon. Of
huh?
Only like my unit of Thermagon camping in the back and three Gen Sitters left on the table. I mean, yeah. One more turn and I would have been obliterated. So.
It ended early? Oh, because it went to like turn five or whatever?
Yeah, and then you rolled five, and it ended on turn five. So
I
couldn't get another turn to finish everything up. But like with another turn, the 3G sealer would have died and probably the other Tarmogan camping in the building would have suffered a bit too.
Okay, so see, I thought you'd lost by getting like tabled. I didn't realize it lost in scenario.
No, it was by objective points.
You won by objective because the Tarmogan camping in the building weren't close to the objective, and the three Tyranids, he had three Tyranids, and only had two tanks near the other objective, so that's why he won.
It's per model, not by the value of the model.
The first blood. No, I got first blood. Right. I got first blood, but you killed my warlord.
I also had Linebreaker that you didn't have.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Which means you got into his deployment zone, right?
Yeah, with those three models. So
those still mean the same thing?
Three Gene Steeler won in the game.
Yeah.
That's something you haven't heard in a long time in 40K.
Yeah. Steelers are back. They're pretty good.
They have a 5 up in goal. And either rerolling ones to it or minus four for armor piercing, so that's pretty good.
Yeah. No, they're really efficient and they're friggin' fast. They're super fast.
You done? So that's it. Yeah, that's it for gaming.
Okay. All right, so Abby, the guys were lying, won't talk much. I have one commission right now. It's a Stormwall / Hurricane kit for Signar. It would be a magnetized kit, so I've been working on this kit, putting the magnets, and I'm starting painting like tonight. Tonight I'm placing I'm using blue tack to mask the model to airbrush it. Right after this episode, I'm gonna go airbrush that thing. The kit is nice. The guide is easy to follow, but I mean the material is good. It's on par with Games Workshop plastic. The problem is the way that they mold everything. Everything comes like in two parts that are about like this. It's like split in half. Everything is like about split in half. So you see the joint on every piece. You know, Games Workshop when they design things. They manage that you hide most of the joint. So
it's
like with our general armor plates or stuff. So it doesn't really show much, but on this thing it shows a lot. So I had spent a lot of time like liming, cleaning the lines, the joint lines. Anyway,
yeah, it's that's a couple things. One, that's a sign of inexperience, because they're new to the material. And also I think it's just a byproduct of the fact they don't do their own layout for the kits.
Maybe, yeah.
So they don't decide how the kits are broken up and put on the sprues. They leave that to the people in China that they hire, that they subcontract to basically manufacture for them. And I think that's the compromise you reach for, this is what we want to pay to have our models manufactured. So, there's a time constraint there, right? Whereas GW, when you're making insane amounts of profit per model because you do everything in-house, you can spend extra time on design and layout because you know that model kit's going to last you 15 years and you're going to make a fortune off of it because of all your rabid fanboys when you launch something, right?
So, yeah, it's like you said, layout is the thing. There's their peeve, my little pet peeve with that model. It's easy to assemble, but a pain in the ass to clean. Anyway, it's done. So now it's the fun and easy part, the painting. aside from that, I've been working on something personal because 40K is back. The Pretty Gold Sun is back. So I've been playing my Nids because they're mostly painted. So I've started to assemble or repurpose old Nids Griblies, like old models from 2nd and 3rd edition that I still had in my bits box. So I dig in my bits box and repurpose some model. So new monstrosities, but yeah, just to complete the army, just to like have a look at the index and just to make it work a bit better. So it's fun. I don't know.
Just don't field any old Tyrant Guard, please.
Those ugly, so ugly small models. I had one right from second edition. I'm using that as a Tyranid Prime because it's the same size as a Tyranid Warrior.
Yeah,
it
I know.
Used to
I know.
Be Hive Tyrant. Like it's on par with the size of a Broodlord, but it's a Hive Tyrant. But it's perfect for my Tyranid Prime. But yeah, no, it's like finding old models and a bit feeling like a kid again, like just putting monstrosities together, and it's fun. It's fun. It will look fine for casual games, like my army is already full of conversions. Yeah, it's an old army also. Like I stopped playing in 5th. I had a lot of conversion, like with models dating from 3rd edition and some from 2nd edition. So
yeah,
it's just cool.
Speaking of old model, Paul got to see my Sesame Seed base of my Imperial Guard because
the infamous
Imperial Guards. Those were them, the painted ones. So they are back to the table, I guess. I should rebase them though.
No, no, keep it as is. It's the infamous Sesame Seed Guards. you have to make a regiment out of them, like a special regiment. Alright, as for games, I've participated in a Warhammer Hordes tournament. Oh my god! You know, Antoine, the last tournament we did was the one at the Chaotic that we did a team tournament.
Yes.
That's the last time I played in a tournament. So it's been a while.
I left such a bad taste in your mouth, eh?
So yeah, it has been a long while, but this tournament had a really, it was ran by XPG Dom Morin, who did that out of the, out of his heart. I mean, he didn't get anything from it, and he had, it was the Grand Prix weekend, and he had tickets for the Grand Prix, and it still ran that tournament. So that guy, man, deserves like a place in Heaven or something, in gaming Heaven.
Wow.
No, but
he had tickets for the Grand Prix and ran a...
Yeah, he went on Friday and Sunday, but he missed on the qualifications on Saturday to run a tournament. So you can tell it's a really great guy. But props to him. But yeah, the team, there was a special team for the tournament. It was a bottom of the barrel. So like beforehand, like 2 months before the tournament, the community came together to fix a list of like the 4 worst warcasters in each faction, and you were limited to those warcasters, and you couldn't use a team force.
Signar has 4 bad casters?
Oh yeah, man. Well, at least 3 solid bad.
At least 3.
And
three
then the other one
all 4
is
siege, yeah.
Kind of suck, but it's not mediocre, but kind
of
suck.
Out of curiosity, were the 4 casters you had Connie, Darius, Siege, and Cray?
Sturgis, Siege, and Cray.
Oh.
So Siege was like
Sturgis,
borderline. Yeah. Like he kind of sucked, but he's not mediocre. But Cray and Sturgis and Connie.
Yeah, I forgot about Sturgis. Oh, holy crap.
So
yeah.
I went with Sturgis and the amazing Connie B. There were 2 other Signar players. They went with Siege and Cray. And I know that 2 other guys were supposed to come too, 2 other Signar players. So it was supposed to have like 5 Signar players, and they were also planning to run Siege and Cray. So I got special preps for running Connie B and Sturgis. And it went super well. I went 3-1 because Connie B went undefeated.
That list was good.
That went super well.
It may not be, you know, meta breaking, but the list worked well.
And it was like fun because it was like mind boggling everyone that Connie B was, it was just keeping winning and winning. But sadly, the tournament was a DNC one, so you had to play both your casters. You were obligated to play them at least once. So when I played Sturgis, he failed. I derped with Sturgis against Nicolas Ménard, who went on and won the tournament.
Yeah. Don't blame it on yourself, you don't blame it on Sturgis.
Yeah, stupid Sturgis. It's funny because I got caster killed like top of two by Nico. Oof. And when he did his rundown of the tournament, every time that he was playing Zarkova 2, and his three games with Zarkova 2, he killed the other caster top of two. So it was like a pattern.
Okay, interesting. So
it's a big gotcha. How do you say, like, all in move? He has to kill you, and if you don't see it coming, he will probably get you. Otherwise, after that, his game is done. That's his only thing.
He commits himself.
Yeah, it's a one trick pony. Yeah. But and the funny thing is, Connie B, I wanted to learn her before the tournament, so I've played her in four practice games, and I won all four also. So she's 7-0 so far in Mark III, Connie B, the undefeated. Yeah, I haven't played her against Team Forces, even against the Zal 230 Immortals list. Still came up ahead. I don't know how I do it.
That's just such a brutal, idea of playing against that.
Yeah, I know. Jesus. Every time I play her, like, super dumb, like, I risk her, she goes, like, super aggressive, like, right on the flag. Like, she goes camping on the flag and is like, witness me! And people always, like, spend 20-25 minutes trying to figure out how to kill her. And then they try, and then they leave her on the between 1 and 3 hit points, and then I win.
I came close.
All I came games close. Like that. Come on. I don't know why she doesn't die.
I still think the best part of our game was when I shot you with that gun that did the auto knockdown. You're like, whoa,
what? Wait, what?
On second thought, I'll take it on my shield guard.
Yeah. I was like, whoa, I didn't see that coming. Yeah. I don't know.
Because that would have been the end of game. Knock her down and then...
Oh, yeah. No, totally. Totally.
Lob mortars at her.
All right. I guess I will play more tournaments. There's the team tournament coming in July. I don't know. Maybe Connie will appear too at this point. She's undefeated so far, and I don't know what else to bring.
Oh, I hadn't heard about that. There's a team tournament where? At the beginner?
It's somewhere in Longueuil, but we don't know where it will be. The bottom of the barrel was at the beginner, but the other one, we don't know. I don't think it has room for enough all those players.
No.
Okay.
It doesn't. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it's going to be at the place we held the birthday party for Jenna and Vince.
Yeah, that's the church. Yeah, that's really possible. Because they are aiming for 48, and the bottom of the barrel was only 19 because a lot of people choked. But I wonder how I rank, because there was no ranking. But going 3-1 and losing only to the champion, that's a fun rank. That's a weirdly fun ranking for a guy who hasn't played tournaments in a long, long, long time. But again, it was a bottom of the barrel, so it was not in one's best list anyway. So. All right. And then right after the tournament, I went to Paul's place to play my first game of 40k. After four games of Warhammer Horde, I was like, okay, I'm gonna go play 40k now. And I was thinking about 40k almost all day long, like looking forward to it more than the tournament.
That's funny.
So I had so far four games of 40k, and Paul, I think we'll even play tomorrow. I mean, you've played against Tonio and Steve, so it's my turn, I guess. I deserve it. No, but four games so far. I've played like Steve at your place on the Tank Company, and then I had two games with 80% G at his place. Two games in the same evening at 1,000 points. So it went super fast. I mean, if we even talk a lot between the games, and still we put off two games in the same evening. And go ahead, dude.
I was going to say, the game does play significantly faster than previous editions.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially if you have a low model count, it goes super fast. Like, my game with Steve, it was done and you were, like, at the second turn or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but
that's also because Antoine hadn't played yet. And...
Yeah, I know. It went, like, if you have a low model account because it's high cost point, it goes super fast.
And you didn't have any shootings.
Yeah, well, I had bad shooting, so it didn't count. I had shooting, just really bad.
Yeah, but only like two models had the shooting attacks, so that's why
I had psychers. I had two psychers, and still it went. I mean, the psychic phase is super fast now compared to what it was. And yeah, my last game, it was against Alexi, a friend from the old days.
Corto.
Yeah, Corto. It's been a while since I've played that guy. Because we don't really play the same games now. It was a 1500 points game. And again, it went like super well. He was playing his Heldar. I was still playing my Nids. They were modeled all over the place. It was constantly moving because all his models were on jet bikes. So I could not, like, even if he disengaged, he could still shoot me anyway. So the game was like, we were constantly moving on the board, and even for 1500 points, it went super fast. That was a really cool, it was my first time running the infamous Swarm Lord with his little guard of a little puppies following him, the Hive Guards. That's like a rock moving on the board. That thing is amazing. And they ended up in the middle of the board. Like, there was a scenario, scoring, I think it's called. Like, one of the objective is a superior objective. It's worth more points than the others. It was by luck. That objective was placed dead center in the table. So we all converged into the middle, and his, like, huge avatar, Eldar avatar. Not the avatar of Cain, but the other one of death. I don't know. Something like that.
Yeah, so exactly.
They ended up like her and the, or him, I don't know. And the Swarm Lord, like, in melee next to the objective in the center of the table. So that was pretty cool. That's pretty cool. Yeah. So, I really like, 40K because it's fast and it's fun and it's very refreshing. So we'll talk about it later, but, those games went really, really well. I mean, just the first games in that edition, and already it's not... I can't say it's easy to pick up, right? The learning curve is pretty small. I don't know.
Yeah, I think... Well, you know what? We'll talk about it some more when we come back.
Sure.
So, is that everything for you, Yo?
Yup.
All right, so why don't we take a quick break, and then we'll come back and talk about some 40K. So we'll be right back, geeks. And we're back. Okay, it's time to get to the meat of the show and talk some 40K. So, it's back in a big way, guys. What were your first impressions of the game? Like, when you first started looking at the rules, before you did anything, what were kind of your first thoughts?
It's simplified. It's meant to be played faster and simplified as before, like with a bit of less rules and especially less rule in the main rule book. Like before, you had all the special rules in the main rule book, like the initial manual fear, jinx, blah blah blah, and everything.
Right.
I mean, you had like what, 8 pages of special rules before, something like
at
that.
At least, yeah.
So it's more in line with AOS. That's what I felt when I first saw, like, all the, because they did do a long teasing process. I mean, every day or every 2 days, they kept releasing blog posts with new rules and teasers about, like, guns, weapon, profiles and stuff like that.
Yeah. They were pretty, they were in good control of their teaser and their leaks.
Yeah.
The hype was building like steadily and heavily. Like they did a really good job of building the hype.
Which is pretty refreshing for Game Workshop. That didn't happen for years.
Yeah, it's been a long time since they first got Lord of the Rings, right? Back when they originally cracked down on all the leaks and stuff. Steve, you said the game is like it's simplified. I don't know if I'd say simplified. I think it's just very, very streamlined compared to what it was. Because I think most of what we used to have is still there. It's just called something else now, and it's either written up in the unit as opposed to in the main rulebook, or, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot that really left the game. I think it just got reworked.
I think I agree with Steve. Like, to an example, the psychic phase is a lot faster and a lot less of a hassle. And,
The psychic phase was a clunky piece of junk in 7th and 6th.
Like, remember the run before, in the previous editions, you had to move in your movement phase, and then in your shooting phase, you had a die to run. Now it's in the, you add that when you do your movement phase. So you only move the unit once. That, those kind of things, like, really help simplify and, speed up the game.
But that's streamlining. It's not simplified. You're still rolling a die. You're just rolling in a different phase.
Okay, then, ballistic. Ballistic or weapon skill. Like, it's a fixed number and it's written on your data sheet. So you know what you need to roll. Better example. Okay.
Well, again, I could say your ballistic skill hasn't really changed, right? It was always a fixed number. It was always 7 less your stat, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's
always
it was more complicated.
Weapon skill changed. Close combat definitely changed in that regard.
To wound change.
Yeah, I think they got rid of a lot of extraneous special rules, like slow and purposeful.
Yeah. And
what did it really add to the game, right?
One of the most notable thing that changed are vehicles, because now they have wounds instead of having the armor value. So they have a strength and toughness, just like a monstrous creature, and they don't have a rear sight. So all weapons fire everywhere now. So with Sponson, you're not limited to like the side and the front of the vehicle. So like if you have
Sponson, you're not paying points for weapons you'll never use, right?
Yeah,
like people who play Limb and Resses can actually take those Sponsons now and not feel like they're paying a tax for just the cool look.
Yeah, exactly.
Because those Sponsons can actually do things now.
And you're not forced with the mounted, the all mounted weapon is not forced to shoot in straight line anymore, so. So that's a bit.
Yeah, everything, all the split fire everywhere. That really helps.
Exactly.
So and the fact that.
Go ahead. That regard, vehicle have been simplified rather than streamlined, I think.
And not just vehicles, but because removing that, you removed all the thing about the AP weapon, wounding tanks, and modifying the glancing and penetration.
Yeah, exactly.
Table.
For the damage table.
So, yeah. Everything's one unit, one unit profile now, right? Everything's the same profile.
Yeah.
Bike no longer have Hammer of Wrath. Jump Troop no longer have that either. So a lot of unit types have been cleansed.
Mm-hmm. It kind of felt like we were going back to, you know, an improved version of 3rd or 4th edition.
I would say 2nd. I would say a mix of 2nd and Age of Sigmar.
More 3rd.
Yeah. No, because 3rd brought the fixed movement, brought the AP instead of armor modification. So I would go for 2nd edition for all those and Age of Sigmar.
Yeah, because like Vehicle and Monstrous Creature, they get worse as they suffer wounds.
Or better.
What?
Or better. Some weapon, some corn stuff gets better at fighting when they get
that's
wounded.
That's the exception, but yeah, it's true.
Frickin' corn. So overall, I think my first impression was that the game seemed to have a lot more of the old flavor to the units. Like a lot of the units did stuff that seemed appropriate. I don't know if I'm explaining myself properly. It felt to me in the last couple editions like that they were so focused on having tons of rules about everything that I just felt like you couldn't do anything anymore. And I think this really opened up, to quote a Privateer Press thing, the design space.
Oh, they really did open the design space. They gutted it open.
And it just makes for more possibilities in the game, right? Especially since things are all on unit profiles now, they can tweak units without having to rewrite whole sections of the rulebook. Yep. Right? You just release if a unit's not performing the way you want it, you just release an updated profile for it. Super simple. Let's talk a little about playing the game. You know, list building. So three ways to play now, like they did with Age of Sigmar. But it's important to note that this launch was much more streamlined than Age of Sigmar,
organized,
and the product was much more refined,
more planned, at least.
Yeah,
yeah. But the product had more of a finished feel. Age of Sigmar at launch did not feel like a finished game, right? You had 4 pages of rules. You had no scenarios. You had no way to even try to balance the games. It was just a mess.
Yeah.
Sure, you know, 2 years later, it's a playable game now, and apparently it's lots of fun. Fantastic. You know, I'm happy for everyone who plays the game, and we've looked at playing the game again. But it still took 2 years to get there. With 40K, they really didn't want to kill the goose that laid the golden egg. Right, so they released a much more finished and polished product than they did with Age of Sigmar.
I think we can say that Age of Sigmar was the test bed of a lot of rules.
But traditionally, fantasy was always a test bed for 40K, right? Random charges and all that. It was all in fantasy first.
True. Like you said, they learned a lot from Age of Sigmar, and they didn't repeat the mistakes.
And the change were less drastic also.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's something I didn't like about Age of Sigmar, because like we were playing Warhammer Fantasy, and it was too different from Fantasy, and it was too close to 40K when it came out, Age of Sigmar. So I didn't like it. Didn't like the feel, didn't like the round base, didn't like anything. But 40K, I mean, it's like AOS, but it's another way of saying that it's like 40K. it's similar enough that it doesn't...
It still feels like the same game, but just different rules.
It's not foreign.
Age of Sigmar doesn't feel like Warhammer Fantasy felt. It's two completely different games.
Very true. Mm.
They just shared models, and barely, when you look at what's being played right now, it's all just the new stuff. So that didn't happen with 40K.
True.
Yeah, no. That's very true. 40K just didn't get launched in that same way. Which is a good thing. I think we can all agree is a good thing.
And just go talk about the fluff. About change. They just moved forward the fluff instead of completely destroying an universe and starting with fragment of it and starting something completely new. So
that's the other thing. For the fluff in and I don't want to make this about Age of Sigmar, but the fluff in Age of Sigmar doesn't feel like fantasy, right? Because it's weird dimensional hopping. It's kind of like when you went from playing back in the day, let's show my age here, when you went from playing regular AD&D to playing like Spelljammer.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like D&D anymore, because suddenly you were in outer space and there was flying spaceships and you were doing ship-to-ship combat and all kinds of weird stuff. It was not the same game, right? Age of Sigmar felt the same way. It's very much not the same game. This game, 40K 8th edition, is still 40K.
Yeah.
So,
ways to play.
ways to play. So, I mean, you've got the full narrative play with the bring what you want, which I don't see anyone doing, except for in specific scenarios designed around certain forces.
I was trying to figure what was the third way, because you
and
mentioned
isn't that third campaign play?
No, there's open play, narrative play, and match play.
Yeah, open play. Yeah, so the open play is the, you know, bring your models, throw them down, have some fun.
Yeah,
I don't know how you really do that. We never figured it out with Age of Sigmar. I guess I can't wrap my head around it in this either. Like I said, unless you have some sort of, you know, pre-agreed on scenario, something to, you know, I don't know. I'll use the GW line. You have to have a conversation with your opponent first. I think the two ways we'll see more often than not are the narrative play, and the match play. And narrative play uses the power levels.
No,
you, well, you can use power levels any type of play.
No, no, narrative play is like historical battle, fixed list, and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So.
But, okay. But the thing is, power levels don't really work in matched play.
Well, yes, I guess
they kind of do.
And you can play your points in the narrative battles, too. You can say, we'll play that special scenario 2x points instead of 2x power level.
Yeah, so I guess I'm kind of mixing two things here.
Actually,
the army construction rules and the ways to play. Yeah.
But they're still related. That's the thing. Either you will, when you build your list, you decide with your opponents if you want to use power level or points. But even if you use points, power level will still be used in some scenarios. Like, they will teleport like a, either like the attacker is the guy with the most, with the last power level or something like that. Or even like when you summon demons, you make a roll with 3d6, and that's the, you can summon a unit with that much power level. Like up to that much power level, even if you use points to run the game. So they are still used during the game, even with points.
I didn't look at summoning. I know in Age of Sigmar you have to have reserved points for summoning.
You still have to do that.
Okay.
And when you summon, you use the power level to know what you can summon.
Okay.
If you wish to bring them back like that. So,
Faster and easier.
So it's they are still used during games, so that's cool that they're not just for this building.
But what I feel is like power level is going to be used for a more casual beer and pretzel game, and points are still going to be used for competitive gaming.
Yes.
Like apocalypse style stuff or like just.
Yeah, for like.
Just fun play.
Instead of using for your 10,000 point game, you could do like a 6,000 power level game or something like that, because you don't have to calculate every options on every vehicle and everything, so it's going to be much simpler to build your list for
at least until we have list building software.
Yeah, so which should be software, in game, right? I mean, I think the disparity between power levels and points does not scale up well. Like the higher you play, the bigger the disparity could be.
Yeah,
but in small games, like in small pickup games, or like where you don't have access to a list builder, or if you just want to show the game to someone to a low point level, power level would be just fine. But if you want to play
just starting, game, right? You're just learning to play the game.
Exactly. You're just starting. Yeah. You want to show the game to someone. Yeah.
Yeah.
To explain a bit for people who haven't seen the rules, power levels are a really low point value to explain the power level of a unit. So let's say a squad of Space Marine is 5 power level, and that's, no matter what equipment they have and what upgrades they decide to pick. So you pay 5 for the 5 guy and that's it. You want to have 10 guys in the squad, you add 4 more power level or 5 more power level depending on your unit entry. And that's it.
It's easy to calculate.
Yeah, it's a broad brushstroke way to play the game.
Exactly. It made me feel of Mark II. Warhammer Hordes.
Yeah.
Mark II. It's easy, super easy to calculate. Like my first list, a 50 power level is about like 1,000 points. My first list I built without a software of 1,000 points took me 45 minutes. But that same list you calculate, like if I wanted to build it with power level, it takes 2 minutes. So if I don't have access to a list builder, I will go for power level. If I have access to a list builder, of course I go for points, but, so like Antoine said, it's not the same, like it's really easy to calculate, so you can quickly came up with it. And you don't have to pay for any of the equipment. It takes into account that everybody's gonna equip their guys anyway, so there's like an average point value.
Yeah, there's no granularity to it. You pay for the guy, and I've read somewhere that the power level are based on using about half or a mid-level use of your extras and equipment options. So it's just an average between your units, but that gives an idea of what they were aiming for.
Yeah.
In tournaments, you're going to see match plays with points anyway. So.
Oh, yeah, sure. Really sure. You will never see power levels.
Yeah. And points changed a bit too, right? And I don't just mean the values. I mean, the way points work, right? In the sense that you now you pay a points cost, even if it's 0 points, but you pay a points cost for every piece of kit your model has.
Yeah.
That, you know, your Space Marine point cost is just the cost for the guy. If he wants a bolter, well, a bolter happens to be 0 points because a lot of the basic kit is, but you still have to calculate for every single piece of kit you load out with, which is why it's a very cumbersome way to play without a list builder and when you're first learning.
Yeah, because right? you have to go back and forth all the time.
Yeah.
And for sure, the points are not with the entry. They're not in the data sheets. The points are at the complete end of the indexes, not with the army. So.
Yeah, you have to go back and forth a lot.
For being photocopied and used beside your book.
Yeah, and that's exactly what we did, right? Like, what I did for my sister's list is I took a bunch of pictures of my cell phone and I inserted them into a spreadsheet so I could reference in tabs in the spreadsheet my different unit types, my elites, HQs, whatever, and have easy access while I'm building my list.
Well, the good news is for those who use Quartermaster on iPhone or iPad, the files are getting up really quickly, and most of the armies are already there.
Is Quartermaster fan-made?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Nothing official has been released yet. It's just fan-made.
No.
Okay.
Yeah, well, I think Quartermaster, I'm trying to remember, I think we paid for the app.
Yeah, we did.
But the data files are fan-made, just like Army Builder. And it reminds me, I should reinstall that.
Yeah, but now there's a new version and you have to buy the app again. But I don't know if the files still work in the old version.
Are you serious?
Yeah, there was an upgrade from version 4 to 5. And yeah, that's why I didn't buy it. But maybe the files still work. I don't know. I haven't tried it.
Well, I can't even install Quartermaster 4. It's no longer on the Apple Store. So, yeah. So much for that. I guess I'll just wait for the GW version of the app, because that'll come out.
Well, there's a cool one on the web. It works super fine.
Yes, and that's great, except it's on the web, and it doesn't format well to my phone screen or my tablet screen.
Yeah.
And the other problem is it doesn't do list verification.
Yeah.
That's true.
Same as Quartermaster.
So if I want to put, you know, 5 Terminators with 5... you know, salt cannons, I can't.
Yeah, yeah. So. You need to know what you cannot do. Yeah. It's a flaw.
Yeah, so it's not a big deal later down the road, but right now when it's early days and things have changed a bit and you're not exactly sure what's changed, it makes things a little harder. All right. List building, we talked about that.
You're looking at the notes.
I'm just looking at your notes here. You've got a little note after.
I think that should go in the notes after, probably, and we should just go with the flow of the game. So after list building, how we start the game, and
because it was related to the first my first point, the second point you're referring to. It's in match plays. You can either play Eternal War or Maelstrom of War. It's two kind of missions. One using the tactical objective cards. One does not. Mm-hmm. And for each of those missions, the guy who finished deploying first will start the game unless the other guy can steal the initiative. So that's why I was saying in the notes that the game starts at list building, because you want to have less units than your opponent, because you want to finish first. Like, you need to think about that when you build your list. Like, what will go into transport? How big do I go with multiple small units or big blobs? So you need to think about that when you build your list. Because it will impact the game. Like, it starts right when you build your list.
Yeah.
How it will impact the game.
Yeah. And, you know, your point is that you said it's, I guess we'll discuss it later in our overall thoughts. All right. So we've talked about list building. Deployment's different. We go back. I mean, what edition was it where we did alternating deployments? There was an edition like that, wasn't there?
It was back in fourth.
Yeah. I was going to say it was fourth edition where we did alternating deployments. Now we're back to that, which is kind of cool. It makes you a little more involved. If you're the guy going second, you're a little bit more involved in deployment.
Yeah. It changed really a bit compared to fourth, because in fourth you had fixed order by unit type.
Yes,
yeah, that's true.
Right.
That's true.
So now everything you deploy can be deployed in the order you want. And also putting something in Deep Strike is a deployment.
Yeah.
Yeah. You put them off table in a...
But it does count as one of your step.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So even stuff that doesn't go on the table still counts as deploying.
Depends, like for transports. What you put in the transport.
Everything is one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So you can put a unit and two characters, and that's like four data sheet that you deploy as one choice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So.
Very true. So, after deployment, what comes next?
They kept the rule to steal initiative. So depending on if you went you went second, you can try to seize. Is it the
right
word?
Seize the initiative. Yes, yeah. That's right.
It's like forge a narrative, but seize the initiative. Yeah.
So movement phase. Biggest change to the movement phase is that different units have different movements now. We're not everyone's 6 inches.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we're back to second edition.
We're back to models actually being different.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's a huge difference between a Terminator that will move 4 inches or like an Orc Meganels compared to a Jinser that move 8. That's a huge difference.
Yeah.
Or I forgot, I skipped that, but when we played my Crute Hounds move 12.
Yeah.
I moved them the same amount as my other Crutes. Totally missing that, but that's a lot of movement at the table.
Yeah.
Especially that they can re-roll their charge. So
and bikes are like 14 or 16, so that's a huge, huge difference.
Yeah. I didn't look, but maybe it means things like my speeders will be useful again.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Because last edition, I hadn't played speeders since probably 4th ed, and then I put some on the table in 7th, only to find out they weren't fast vehicles anymore. I'm like, what do you mean they only move 6? They're speeders. That's not very speedy. They move the same speed as a Space Marine walking. Fantastic. It was a little disappointing. So I'm happy that vehicles and units all have different movements now. It gives them a little more flavor. It makes things like NIDs terrifying again.
Oh, yeah.
Because they rush you and you've got to do something about that. You can't just stand back in a corner and castle and pray.
I think overall, except for the really slow stuff, most of the game is faster now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It really feels that way anyway.
Yeah,
the movement is more.
You don't roll for reserves. They arrive when you want, and they can arrive on the first turn, and you can charge when you arrive from reserve. Yeah. So the game is really, really fast. Yep.
No scatter. That's huge. Do you know how many times I lost my Terminators before they ever made it to the table? Or they end up teleporting into like the wrong corner of the table, like far
I remember
away from
that.
Happened all the time.
Saved me.
Hated it.
Yeah. No, it's good that it's gone. It's good. It's a good thing that it's gone. All streamlined.
Yeah, it makes those units fun again.
Yeah.
Because that was the thing. You pay, especially like Terminator's a great example. You paid such a premium for the units, but they were so bad. You know, they randomly teleported in the middle of nowhere if they teleported on. If you didn't teleport them on, they walked on. They were slow and purposeful, so they couldn't sweeping advance. There were really high points value. Everyone had weapons that ignored their armor. So, like, what was the point? You never saw them. Yeah. So it's nice that we're seeing these things come back. And, I think the movement phase, changing it up so different models have different movements, it adds some variety, adds some flavor back to the game. And it changes the feel of the models. So from that movement phase, we go into psychic phases next, I believe, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So this was super cleaned up. you don't have 8 million powers to choose from anymore. Well, you've got 3. Everyone has smite. And then you've got your 3 other powers you can choose from. And they're all pretty decent. I think some are better than others. But looking at them, I can see uses for the ones I've looked at. They all seem useful.
Yeah, they all add a buff or something useful, but they don't tip, like, they don't break the game.
Well,
yeah,
and the nice
no
thing is
invisibility
that
there.
Yeah, and there's no calculating, okay, how many different psychic units do I have? I have this many warp charges.
Power points or something like that.
Warp charges, yeah. It's not that anymore. Now it's just, you know, I have this unit. I want to use an ability. I roll two dice. Do I beat the target number? Yes, great. Did I roll double one or double six? No. Woohoo, power goes off. Did I roll a double one or double six? You know, oh well, I perils of the warped. Yeah.
Which didn't happen yet to you.
No, I've been very lucky with my Grey Knights, smiting all over the place.
It happened, happened twice to me.
Yeah.
Two times, dude.
And you know, one thing we probably should have mentioned before in the list building, and it's a very important thing, and I can't believe we skipped it. So when you list build now, you do it according to detachments. And detachments let you change the construction of your list, but also they grant you extra or penalize you command points. And command points are a big part of this game.
Yes.
That's in match play.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the basic list come with three base command points.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, you have all types of detachments. The core one are similar to the old force organization chart. You have a simpler one, one that takes a bit more troops and HQs that give command points, and a really big one where you need to have some of everything. And after that, you have specialized detachments, like some for a lot of heavies, some for a lot of fast, a lot of elites, and some for the special types of troops, like 3-5 flyers, 3-5 Lords of Wars.
Yeah.
Same for buildings. The only way you can get buildings and fortifications if you take a detachment of fortifications.
Mm-hmm. And they block the number of detachment depending on your game size. So you cannot abuse it and have, let's say, 5 different detachments, because most games are 2 or 3 detachment max.
Yeah. Well, that rule is actually optional.
Yeah, but it's going to be used by
everyone who's got half a brain.
Yeah.
And I can see, like, tournaments limiting, instead of at 2,000 points, you can take 3 detachments. Some might limit it to, like, 2 detachments, or even if you're playing at 2,000 points.
So, yeah, I can totally see that, too.
Maybe, yeah, they can customize it, like, tournament organizer, they can customize it so it's good.
Turnimize it?
Yes, yeah, exactly. Turnimize it.
New word. Yeah. But that's for, you said the match play, it's Battle Forge. It's like different ways to build your army. So you can play in open play or narrative using Battle Forge, or you can play in match play without using Battle Forge, but you want to use Battle Forge because you want those command points.
Yeah, and they're so good. So they let
Aren't you required to be Battle Forge for match play?
No, I don't think so. Maybe,
I was thinking it was required.
Match play, you need to select armies from the same faction, and Battle Forge is organizing them into detachments. I don't think you need to be Battle Forge.
I might be mixing the terms, yeah.
Yeah, but I think we'll see tournaments with stuff will all be Battle Forge.
Well, I think even casual games would be, the default would be Battle Forge.
Those command points are too good.
Yeah.
So command points let you do 3 things right now, and we'll probably see more effects of command points when the individual army codexes come out.
Yeah, and some scenarios have extra command point use.
Yeah. So the basic ones are spend a command point, reroll at 1 die, and these are all usable once per phase.
Yeah, for phase. Yep.
Yeah. The other one is spend 2 command points, and you can do a counter assault, and we'll describe that during the assault phase because we haven't talked about assault, so I don't really want to get into that now. And the third option, I should know this. Oh, pass the leadership test.
They're all important.
Which is also very important. So it's great, and all 3 of them are good. All right. So where were we? Psychic phase. Yeah, so psychic phase is super simple. Roll 2 dice, beat a target number, your power goes off, do cool things. I can get behind this. But everything's quicker, right? You know, and if I'm targeting, you know, a unit and there's a Sekir nearby, he can roll against my dice, and if he beats my number, well, then he cancels my power. And then we move on, right? Next Sekir goes, or next phase happens, or whatever. It's so much more streamlined. But it's not streamlined to the point. Do you remember third edition where Psykers only had Smite and that was it?
Yeah.
And it was like, no one, you never saw Librarian in all of third edition. It's not that streamlined, but it's certainly less chaotic than what we've seen in sixth and seventh.
No, it takes minutes to do the psychic phase. Like it's there and it's gone. It's super easy.
So after that, we go to shooting. All the Daka Daka. Shooting really hasn't changed all that much, I don't think. A couple things. Moving and shooting heavy weapons. You're at -1 to hit.
Instead of no shooting.
Our 7th edition was on a 6 with a sniper. So now it's a minus 1. It's a big difference. You can run and shoot assault weapon with a minus 1. Like an advance, I mean. So that's something also.
Yeah, it's...
Something big.
It still feels like shooting.
Something big. You can split your shooting however you want.
Yeah, that's the huge thing.
Yeah.
Right. And I think we mentioned briefly, I think Steve mentioned vehicles, right? The fact that vehicles don't have firing arcs anymore.
Yeah.
So you can just shoot all your guns in whatever direction you want. The facing of the vehicle doesn't really matter.
And you can split like a last cannon will go to the tank and the heavy bolter will go to the infantry and it's really fun. Or if you have like three guys shooting, like two guys will shoot there, one guy will shoot over there. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Templates are gone. That's a big deal.
Templates are gone.
No templates. So weapons that would normally do, traditionally do template damage, now just do multiple wounds.
Multiple hits.
Yeah, I should say. So maybe 2d6 hits to a unit or whatever. So effectively the same thing, but it also means that you don't have to worry about spacing your guys out all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
Right, coherency got smaller. You know, it's your 2 inches now, and you can blob stuff up. It doesn't really matter. It just makes that easier to handle.
Yeah, exactly. So it's more streamlined. The movement phases are a lot faster than used to be.
Yeah,
you don't have to think about that. Yeah.
Any other major points from the shooting phase we didn't touch on?
Characters. Characters cannot join units now.
That's right.
And if they are less than 10 wound, you cannot target them with shooting unless they are the closest target. So they are not even units, but this most of the time you cannot just shoot at them anyway. So
yeah, which some people have problems with because it's not very representative of how real life would be. But well, we're playing a small toy soldier game with guys in the 41st millennium, right?
I'm sorry, guys, I don't care about that argument at all.
Yeah.
Oh no, it's not
real. Actually, there are some exceptions, right? Snipers can shoot characters mm-hmm. no matter where they are because they have a special rule. So there's still ways to do it, but overall, your character is heroic and he can lead the army. He just can't be in the front of the army.
Yeah. Lead from the back.
Yeah.
War machine from the middle.
I think that's everything out of shooting, isn't it, guys?
Cover doesn't work the same. Also, just give you +1 to your armor save. So it's not a big deal. Like Steve, our game, my Termagant in the cover, that was just like a 5+ save instead of a 6+. I mean, it doesn't really change a lot of things. So, it won't save you. Maybe
and there's another big thing with cover. To gain cover, you need to be in the terrain piece. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So a barricade doesn't give anything.
It does.
You can be behind.
No, it does. It's a special rule for barricade.
Oh, okay, yeah, but but any other terrain piece, you need to be in or on top of. You cannot be on the other side of it. Like a forest, you need to be in. You cannot be behind the forest. You don't get the bonus for it.
I wish it was clearer because it says that if you are hidden 50%, like if you're not in it, if your infantry is not in it, anything that is hidden 50% is still have cover. So it's not clear. It could be clearer. It could be clearer.
Yeah.
But yes, you will find less cover and cover will have less of an impact for sure.
Which again makes the game flow faster because models die quicker.
Yep. Oh, things dies in that game. It's super violent.
The way the 41st millennium should be. All right. We're going to take a pause, guys, while Antoine runs off to Chichliette. When he comes back, we'll go into the close combat phase.
Yeah.
Steve, you still with us?
Yeah.
I'm trying to keep it moving quick. I know you're going to get to bed.
Starting to fall a bit.
Yeah, you're fading. I know. Sorry, dude. I know we got started so late.
Well, it's okay.
You know, you don't need to be...
you're good for the time because it's time for
need to be Battle Forge. Anton was right. I'm looking at the scenarios, and the scenarios specify that you need to be Battle Forge for match play.
Yeah, I thought so. I wasn't sure. So fair that you two fight it out to the death.
I don't intend to. But...
Did you see the fact that you cannot use a command point to force a reroll on your opponent's die?
I thought it was that from obvious, the beginning. But yeah.
No, but raw. If you...
Well, no, Steve.
Could have
been not read as written. It's more like read as you want to read. You know, sure.
Yeah, I'm looking at Woods, and that's what it says. If your infantry is completely within, they get in cover. Otherwise, if they are hidden 50%, like every other unit, you need to be hidden at 50% by it to gain the cover. So you don't, even if you're behind, if you don't see the model or completely, then they still get cover. That's the lax wording of Games Workshop, because I think most people see other units only receive the benefit of cover if at least 50%, and they think it applies to what is not infantry, but it applies to what is not inside the wood. That is not an infantry inside the wood.
Well, so you it might apply, depends on the what it's supposed to mean, and that's unclear right now.
Yeah, like I said, it's some gray area of some from.
Well, I think that's in the FAQ already. I think they talk about the wood specifically in the FAQ, and it's the whole unit has to be inside it. And if one model's outside the unit, then no one gets cover.
Anyway, the way you resolve hits and wounds and all of that, you can allocate the first wounds to guys that are like, let's say you have a 20 guys and 18 of them are inside cover, inside the wood, and 2 of them are outside. You can allocate, like, you're supposed to be sequencing anyway. So it's just that fast rolling, when everything is the same, you do fast rolling. So you can apply the first 2 wounds, the guy outside the cover. Once they're dead, then everybody gets cover.
Yeah.
It's not before, you don't determine before rolling anything. It's, you go one by one. When everybody gets the same save, you can fast roll. So it's not as dumb as it sounds on the first time you read it.
Yeah, no, for sure.
It's almost like they think about it. They thought about it.
Yeah. All right, let's get back. All right, so I think we've talked shooting phase pretty much death. That takes us into close combat. Close combat got sped up and is actually feasible in this edition.
Yeah.
That
helps like Nids and Orcs armies
actually work.
Well, to be honest, we skipped a phase. There's the charge phase.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, so you declare your charges.
And the change in the charge make it possible to have close combat.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. So, charging hasn't really changed since 7th, though. You declare your target, you roll 2d6, your target declares... Well, actually, you declare your target decides to overwatch or not. Then you roll your 2d6, see if you succeed. If you succeed, if you get within an inch of your target, yay, you're in close combat. If you fail your roll, you stand still and get shot to pieces.
And the big difference between 7th edition, 7th edition, you needed to allocate wounds on the closest model from the shooting unit. Now it's you decide who gets the wound. So it's usually the guy at the back. So you guy in the front, they're still there when you roll your charge distance.
Yeah, that's true. We didn't talk about wound allocation.
That was such a pain for orcs. Like, you declare a charge, you lose 10 guys.
Or anyone who wanted to get close combat, right? Yeah.
So then your guys are like 3 inches behind where they were, so, you know.
Yeah. And that's more like how 3rd edition was, right? And I think 4th also worked with the target player allocated wounds. Was it
all the way up to 5th? It's a bit fuzzy.
It was all edition except 7th.
Six and 7th were very close.
Yeah.
6 also had the front guys dying, I believe.
Okay. Yeah, but you had no Overwatch in that time, so it didn't affect the charge.
Didn't 6 have Overwatch?
Yeah, six I had, but...
Yeah.
Anyway. My third, fourth, and fifth, which are the main edition I played, you didn't have that.
That's right.
Another thing, you cannot charge a unit that you didn't declare a charge against.
Yeah.
Which you could do because if you had the movement to touch a unit that you didn't declare a charge against in 7, you could charge it. Or something fuzzy about that. And now you have to declare, so they always get an overwatch if you try to charge them.
Exactly. You can do a multi-charge, but that's...
You're talking multi-charges,
Multiple overwatch also.
The way it should be.
Yeah. You can still drag them in combat by other means, but not by the charge.
Yeah. Consolidating into them or whatever.
Even the pile-in you can, but you can only fight the people you charge if you have charge this turn. That's so you can pile into another unit, but you won't be able to fight them, and they will be able to fight you.
Not necessarily the best plan.
Not always the best plan, though.
So streamline-wise, one of the big changes also was that there's the weapon skill opposed role became easier.
We get to
the
melee table. Then. We get to melee then.
Yeah. Talk about the fighting now. That table changed a bit, right? Get a little bit more streamlined.
Yeah.
Well you could make a table. Before it was the same. You had a math calculation that you could do that gave a table. It's the same right now. I saw some people building that table to have it near them.
Table of what? It is written on your data sheet where your weapon skill is 3+, your old 3+.
No, strength versus toughness.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, even though that table's super simple now. That's right. To hit now, there's no more opposed table. That's right. It's just a straight up, 3+, 4+, 5+, whatever.
The other's weapon skill. It's your weapon skill. Yeah. That's it. That's all.
Yeah. That's right. Which makes things quicker because there's no referencing.
Yeah.
I mean, let's face it. We all got pretty quick at that anyway. You play the game one or two games, you know that table by heart, and it doesn't really matter. Yeah, but still,
especially
every second counts.
The same table in fantasy. So,
and it was the same table since second edition.
So,
for us old timers, that didn't make a difference. But now you just have a stat you roll, and that's it. And your damage roll, like your to wound roll, I should say, is simplified. And now it's set up so that everyone can wound everything.
Yeah, that's a big change.
A lasgun can wound a land raider. Sure, it's going to need a 6. But it can still do it, and the Land Raider's still going to save on a 2 or 3 plus, whatever its armor is. Yeah. But, in theory, it could happen. So there are those times where maybe you have a half, a mostly dead vehicle, and you'll have your squad of guardsmen with las guns shoot at it, just in the off chance you do that last wound or two to destroy it.
You will see some Hail Mary,
like
so actions
pretty cool.
Like that. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
That makes some very cinematic scenes, right?
Yep.
Where your 50 conscripts heroically throw themselves at a Land Raider.
Just in case.
Or at a knight.
Or at a knight, yep. And then you have to have the knight explode and kill everything around it, right, Yom?
Yeah, but damn, that thing. Oh my god. Explain it fast, Paul? It's pretty shot.
Oh, last time I played 7th edition, we played a big apocalypse game, and you had orc knobs, I think. Wasn't it a big squad of knobs?
They were knobs with a war bus.
Cyborgs, right? Weren't they cyborgs?
I know cyborgs don't exist anymore, but they were knobs with a knobs with a war bus. Unit of knobs with a war bus, and they gang up on the knight. They killed it.
And they destroyed it. Because the power claws and stuff, they killed it, but then it exploded and eradicated the unit.
Yes. Even the war.
It was awesome.
They killed everything. It's a wash.
I thought there was a thing for cyborg bodies or something previously.
It's been gone for a while. Now it's like a feel no pain 6+ in the cyborg
body. Okay. Anyway, so back to this edition.
What is important in the fight phase? They specify who will fight. It's everybody who has charge or who is within 1 inch of the enemy at the start.
Yeah. And characters can do the
the
heroic intervention thing.
Yeah,
right?
If they're within 3 inches after a charge, they can move in. So that will be important because when you do your activate your unit, the active player start with everyone who has charge, and then you alternate starting with the active player. You pick one unit after the other. They don't have to be in the same combat. So sometimes you will like your unit will kill models, and the opponent will remove those that touch the character. But then when you activate that character to fight, he can still pile in because he was within 1 inch of an enemy at the start.
Mm-hmm.
So he can still pile in, do his move and attack. So you cannot like rob a character of his melee phase. Like. It's a big change from previous editions.
Yeah, I really like it. I thought close combat was super streamlined. It felt fun. And it felt dynamic. Like, you really get that sense, like, the whirling melee. I think we'll see a little bit less shenanigans now, because the wound allocation shenanigans don't really exist anymore.
Exactly. Oh my god, that was bad.
I mean, there'll probably be new and interesting ways to break the game, but for the moment, at least, it seems like things will go quicker and be better. Any other points for the fight phase? I mean, you do your fighting, and then at the end, you do your consolidation or whatever.
Yeah, consolidate, and then you can engage people that were not in melee, or you can you go towards the closest enemy. That's a bit weird, because like a huge unit that is stretched out between two targets, at some point, the guys in the middle won't be able to move, because you need to keep unit coherency.
Yeah.
So you will try to move on one target and to the other target, and the guy in the middle are just like keeping coherency so they don't get to move in and fight.
Yeah, they're maintaining the chain.
Yeah, conga line, but yeah. No, that's true. Pretty much it. Because like, you can engage something, and if you're engaged, you cannot shoot. You can disengage, like we did. We mention that in the movement phase. You can disengage. That's a big thing.
Oh yeah, that's a huge thing. That's There's a so huge, much change, huge right? thing.
So you can pile in and or consolidate and engage new target, and they have to move out if you want to. Well, if you move out, normally you cannot shoot, but the rest of your army can shoot. So you cannot lock something or lock yourself in combat so you don't get shot, because you will get shot anyway.
Yeah. Vehicles have a close combat profile now.
Yeah, they can run
That's
you
an
over.
Important thing to mention, too. Your Land Raider can punch someone in the head. Or drive over them or whatever. Which is kind of neat. Though I wouldn't advise using a Land Raider in that way. I was listening to a podcast the other day, Independent Characters, and Carl was talking about how he charged... I think a bunch of Necron warriors with a Land Raider, and was fighting the own melee with it, and he realized, this is ridiculous. Why am I doing this?
Well, Paul, if you recall our game, I was charging your Dread Knight with Chimera.
Yep. Because I had to shoot
prevent
a Dread Knight
him from shooting at the rest of my army.
Yep.
Yep, absolutely.
Because you went and disengaged, and then he could overwatch me and if I was charging him back, but I was grinding a couple of wounds with my multi-laser and just charging back in to be sure he wouldn't be able to.
And overwatch is only on unmodified sixes, so it's a lot better than getting your full ballistic. So yeah, no, it's a legit tactic.
It felt weird though, but it worked.
You'll get used to it.
Another tactic with vehicles now being able to go in close combat is that you can, when you overwatch, you only overwatch the first unit that gets into you. After that, you're engaged, you cannot shoot anymore. So you can charge with a throwaway transport first, and then charge with your real combat unit that you don't want to get overshot.
Yep.
Overwatch.
Yep.
Well, I think but you have the option of not overwatching that transport, right?
Yeah, but if they don't, and they're now engaged, they cannot shoot anymore.
That's true. They cannot... Yeah, that's true. Oh, actually, we forgot something else about shooting. Something fun and interesting in this edition. If you have pistols, you can shoot in close combat.
Yeah.
So those plasma pistols...
Yep, they get the more for their money.
Become really good.
More bang for their bucks. Yep.
Oh, another thing in shooting that we talked about and loved, combi weapons.
Yeah.
There's no more one-shot limit on the combi weapon, right?
And you can shoot both.
Yeah, you can shoot your bolter and your combi plasma, whatever. Mm. Combi melta, combi plasma, combi grav. So many good
the
things.
The thing that it's not one use for the battle, that's great.
Yeah. I think the only thing that's still one use are like crack missile, not crack missiles.
Hunter killer
missiles and stuff. Yeah. Which makes sense, so that's fine. I have to say, now that I think we've talked about all the phases, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's not like a...
So we need the morale phase.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Thanks, Steve. Steve's not asleep. This is good. I'm so excited about the game that I'm forgetting stuff all over the place. Morale phase.
And it's on 1d6 and not 2d6.
Yeah. So you roll... Basically, when you lose models, and it's only models, not wounds... At the end of the turn, you roll a d6 for that unit. You take the leadership.
You add the model.
You add your lost models to the dice roll and compare it to your leadership. It's getting late. My brain not so working. Not good working stuff. So you do a comparison, and if your roll is higher than your leadership when combined with the models lost. Well, then you subtract more models from the unit. You lose extra models. The surplus you lose. So if your leadership is 8 and you roll a 6 and you lost 3 models, well then 6 plus 3 is 9, your leadership's 8, you lose one more model from the unit.
Yeah.
And that can be really rough because it's models, not wounds. You know, yeah. If you've got a multi-wound unit, or unit of multi-wound models, I should say, you know, you're pulling off 2-3 wounds at a time. It sucks.
Yeah. losing an orc boy is not a big deal, but a mega nab with that, it's a big deal.
Yeah, because they're 3 wounds each, right?
Yep.
But I still like it better than the old sweeping advance rule. Like when people would break and then you'd have that one space marine chase down your 50 knobs.
Yeah.
And wipe out your unit because we caught you.
Yeah.
You know, heroic marine or not.
No, that was a big swingy. Like, yeah, it was always depending on one die roll, opposed die rolls. Like, yeah, I didn't like that. It's gone now.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Let's talk about what we like for the game. I'm going to go first because I am. I find the game is super cinematic again. It makes me feel... a lot like we used to play back in the second and third edition where stuff was just kind of over the top and fun. It feels a little less crunchy. I mean, the crunch is still there, but it's disguised better. It feels more like a modern miniature game, I find.
Well,
feel free to talk, guys.
Yeah, I'll go. I was waiting to see if anybody was going. What I like so far is I feel like you can play every unit for now.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no bad choices or stuff like you wouldn't play, or like even in the Imperial Guard, I feel like I could play my Ogryns again. They don't look bad, and like old stuff that wasn't played at all.
Ratling snipers?
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they can shoot at characters, but like other stuff, like you didn't see, may get to have a small combat for now, like the Dreadnoughts.
The Dreadnoughts, yep. Most of the orcs.
And that's the thing. And we're not saying everything's equal because there's obviously more optimal choices.
Yeah, of course.
But for the moment, nothing feels so far out of optimal. And let's be honest, we're not super competitive gamers. But I don't feel like I'm punishing myself by taking a Dreadnought list.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah.
Whereas I could have done it in previous editions, and it felt like I was, you know, cutting off my own arm.
It's so early that, like, the big cookie-cutter, like, Ubernet list have not emerged yet. So, like, you can find many things. You can build many kind of lists. Like, you feel like, yeah, I will try many kind of things, and you can expect to face many kind of builds. It's not going to be always the same thing. It's too young. It's too young in this edition, too soon. So it's pretty cool for that. It's refreshing because it's like the game is wide open again.
Yeah, that's the expression. Everything old is new again.
It's a lot more streamlined. It's less intimidating. For guys like me.
Oh, God. who
quit the game.
Returning players are new players, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Old players are coming back, veterans are that left the game in fourth or fifth. It's weird the number of guys in my feed that left the, like in their 30s, 40s that left the game in fifth edition and that they are coming back. They feel like welcome again to 40K. It's like their first love of wargaming, tabletop wargame, and they're coming back. Like it's a more, well, it was always a bit bare and pretzel in the rules, but people did not take that approach. But it feels more bare and pretzel than ever it was.
Yeah, I'll give you that, absolutely. I think the new GW
helps a lot.
Really, really did a great job, right? Antoine, any thoughts?
I only played one game. So I have less experience than you, and one of the big reasons I stopped playing 40K was that I was bored of the army I have, and I played my first game with one of those army, and that didn't really change. So my opinion has been colored by that. I want to try the game again with another of my armies. The other ones are not painted or not even assembled, so there's a big step there that needs to be taken before I can get to play. But that's coloring my view. And right now, I see the game as being a lot better, more interesting. Everything you said, guys, I agree with, but right now it's not enough for me to jump back into the game. The number of, like, what I have, I don't want to play my Taos. It's too much shooting. And when I started playing them, I started playing them at release, and I've not followed the new codex. So I really have only the old stuff. And a lot of it was playing with the jump troops that could hide and stuff like that. That's no longer possible. So that part, which I liked, is not there anymore. The crude mercenaries are not there. So it's just basic crude, and they're not even combined units now, so it's just separate entries. So it's swarming my force organization chart with useless garbage. But I like that those models. So right now, I need to try another army to see if I like it better. But 40K being a game of large engagement, it needs a lot of stuff. And I no longer play games that need so much stuff. So I don't see myself painting a whole army. And because of that, I don't really see myself playing 40K.
Makes sense. And it's a big investment, both in money and time.
Yeah.
And to be honest, you don't even really play War Machine that much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And you consider that your primary game. I'm not even sure if you still do.
Well, I don't have much playing time. And I have so many games that I'm interested in. That's the only reason I'm not playing War Machine that much, because I have two playable painted armies for those games. So I can play it. But 40K, there I have some interest to do it, but I don't see how I could manage to do it with the time available. I won't be able to paint and assemble my skitteries in any timely manner, and I don't want to play my Tau. I don't really want to paint my Chaos. Those would be easier to get to a playable level. They're all assembled or mostly assembled, but I have no interest in playing them. So because of that, except if I fall on a already assembled and painted nice army that I could trade for other stuff, I think I'm out of the game. What I'm looking for more is not 40K, it's Shadow War, because building a small warband of the skitteries, those skitteries, I see as a manageable option.
Yeah.
But a full army? Nah.
Yeah. The one interesting thing I thought about this game was that even at 1,000 points, the game felt like a good game. I always felt like 7th and 6th and even 5th to a certain extent. At 1,000 points, you didn't feel like you had enough going on the table to make the game very interesting. I find
three knights at 1,000 points. That's sad, Paul.
Yeah, I know, Steve. I disappointed you.
Yeah.
I'll try to do better, Steve.
Thanks, Paul.
I'll try to do
better. Yeah, that's something I like. The size of game we played 1,000-point games, and yeah. We had enough stuff on the table to make it a real game, I think. So that I liked. And 1,000 points, it's more manageable. But with the speed I have and the other project I have on, even that is probably like a couple of years of work ahead of me. So
you need to lower your standards, son.
Yeah. That's paint with the contrast values. And
standards. It's having time. I have other games I want to play too. So yeah. I have to build on those and some contracts, all the podcast stuff, the events, like Color Ton Monde, which we should have be working on more. Yeah. So, and all that is taking time. And that's all my hobby time. And sadly, I can do all of that in my commute.
Yeah, no, I hear you. My hobby time is taking assembling I can do while watching Muriel or, so it's easier. But painting and stuff, my painting windows are few and far between now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Unless I start getting up at 6 o'clock in the morning to paint for a couple hours before everyone else gets up. Which I really don't want to do.
Isn't that a huge
at the time
investment?
You go to bed, it's almost before going to bed.
Yeah, exactly.
In my case, it's not too much of a problem because it's not a big investment. My nids are playable again and they're flea painted.
And you want to play them.
And I want to play them. They're fun to play. Maybe playing my orcs with some shading and contrast painting. I should be able, like a value painting, I should be able to manage a painted army relatively fast. So if I focus on one project, shouldn't take me years to complete army. So yeah. I already have the models and they are low model count. I kept the Death Guard from the Dark Imperium box. So with the Great Unclean one that is already painted. So it's doable to have a small force with low model count. So I'm looking forward to trying different armies and different builds. One thing I really liked, Paul, even at that point, it felt like a real game. A lot of armies, they have options for, deployment, anywhere on the table. Like, not just your battle line. It didn't feel like two battle lines coming closer to each other or one trying to get closer and the other one camping in the back. Like, in all my games, it's super fast and you have models like popping out everywhere on the board, rushing for objective or to get into melee. Like, nids have a lot of those options, but a lot of armies have those options also. So in my games, like their models, even on the first turn, there are models all over the table, like everywhere. They're just popping out and then they start to fight and get into melee. So it's super fast and aggressive and you're deep into the action on the first turn. Like, think Wormhordes, where the first turn, there's always a thing where you run, if you have the top of one, you run to get into position. It's not really that in 40k. It's like the action starts right on the first turn. So you're really getting, even at low pointage, you're in the game from the start.
Yeah. And even if you don't have much shooting, most of it has a longer range. So everything is going to do something.
Yeah.
I mean, compared to a War Machine. So I don't see any War Machine standing in their development zone and shooting at the opponent. But
no.
In 40K, you could do that with some of your longer range shooting. So.
And you're probably going to lose by scenario if you do that also.
Yeah. So you have to move up, but also you have some abilities to stay behind.
Yeah. No, it's I felt that all games were like brutal and fun and a lot of action. It's not camping. You don't really can win by camping. That's what I think.
Yeah.
I think that the melee armies have a better shot also. Like the way they are faster, they can engage. Shooting army has the option to disengage and shoot. So it's not, I felt like previous editions, you will camp with like heavy support or heavy, like
model that will shoot a lot of, damage. Weapon that will put out a lot of damage. So high damage output. And melee army will have trouble getting into the game.
Getting into melee, yeah. So they couldn't do anything.
Yeah, so you will lose too much, so that when you defend and contact, if you contacted, you didn't have enough.
You're so blunted, you have nothing
left.
So
now it's, I feel like it's more balanced.
Yeah, I definitely go along with you on that. It feels like a better game in that regard.
Yeah, but we only play 1,000 point, and we played on a 4x4. So playing on a 6x4, you can, depending on the deployment, if you play on the sideway or diagonal, you can still camp stuff in an artillery in the back shield and just fire away while you soften the other one, and it's going to take a long time for him to come into close combat. So I feel like at bigger games and more like standard tournament size game, you're going to see that again.
Like, I played at 1,500 points, and there were... Yes, it was harder to get into it. I mean, it was a deployment that you start like a horizontal, like there were 24 inches between the two, and we were playing like sideways on the 6x4. Yeah. So it took me longer to get into melee, but again, models will deploy in reserve and arrive like in the back of the opponent's army. So even with that deployment and at 1500 and on the 6x4, there were models all over the place.
And well, if because you camp, you have Tyranid, but like if you have orcs, they will just need to advance and pray for the best.
No, orcs. Well, they have really fast transports. They have a lot of things that can deep strike. They have like commandos that can infiltrate. There's a lot of things even with orcs. I'm optimistic that that camping, because of the way that the scenarios, like objective, are placed. I don't think that camping will be a viable option to win. Yes, it's doable, but I don't think it will be viable.
Yeah, I think that's only going to work in very limited. Like, no one's going to build tournament armies around the idea of camping, right? I just don't think that's going to happen.
Yeah,
not with the unit profiles we have in the basic indexes. No. You know, something may come out later that's so gross at long range destruction that it becomes viable, or maybe large scale Astra Militarum with like bombardment all over the place, just trying to wipe the other guy off the table. I guess it's possible, but I don't really see anyone else having that type of ability.
No, I think it's more combined arms than before.
Yeah, yeah.
Should make for more interesting games.
Yeah.
I mean, we'll keep playing and we'll see.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Anyone have any kind of like things they didn't like about the new edition? Anything they thought was lackluster or kind of let them down?
Well, I talked about the it's more like it felt weird, like the vehicle charging the to like force the other one to pin a unit or like your Grand Knight or something like that. That's something I felt weird, but I'll just need to adjust because it's now part of the rules and part of the way to play.
Yeah. It's right. You'll have to have new ways to think, right? Yeah. With those vehicles, like things you can do.
Yeah, it's like the part of it.
Using the transports to ram into units so they can't overwatch anything else because they're engaged.
And also, I think cover will have to adapt as well because it's not like it used to be, but like as con for now, I only play two games, so for now I don't have much complaint yet.
When you say cover, you mean the way tables are set up will have to change, right? That's true. I can see that as well.
I think that even if the new Games Workshop, some things don't change. The rules are more streamlined, but there are still some gray areas. It's not super well written, so some things are not super clear how they work, especially when it comes to Terran and some model entries also. There's a, I call it the Sighting Talents Gate.
on the Tyrant, I joined the Tyrant Facebook group, and every day there's a thread that pops because someone wants to know how many attacks does a Trigon have. Because with semantics, it can be either 7 or 9. It's not clear. It bugs me that something like that is not clear. Or the way that cover works, or Terran, like movement into Terran, how does it work? It's not, like, it was at the Abyss. We were 5 players. And, I did a quick survey of, like, I was pointing at Terran, like, oh, will you manage that? How will you manage that? And the 5 guys, we had different answers. So if it's that point, no, it's not clear enough.
See. Yeah. And I totally seen that. I was talking with my buddy Ben about, Chaos. Was it Raptors? Was it whatever one of the close combat jump troops things are?
They're Raptors.
I think there's an alternate model, like something Talons or.
Yeah, the Warp Talons or something.
Warp Talons, yeah.
Blood Talons?
Something. Something Chaos-y, Talon-y. And they have a basic unit profile, like 2 attacks or whatever, or 3, whatever it was. And they have Lightning Claws, so it says Lightning Claws, add 1 for the. To the attack value. But it was unclear if it was 1 per claw. Well, it wasn't in the profile, we assume. But he's got 2 lightning claws. And it says lightning claw add 1 to the attack.
Is
so
it
is
a
it,
pair as is it 1? Per? Or because some.
Is it for the pair? Who knows?
Yeah. Like it,
I assume it's for the pair, but read as written, it's ambiguous.
The sighting talents of the Trigon. It said that if you have 1, then 1 pair, you get 1 extra attack when you attack with this weapon. When you fight with this weapon. So when you fight, the way you split your attacks, you can select like a different weapon, right? Like you can do 2 attacks with a power fist and 1 attack with something else.
Mm-hmm.
So people were saying, well, it has 3 sets of sighting talents. So I will select like an attack with 1 of each set. So I will get the +1 3 times. Instead of 1. See? Oh. See, that's like, and you want to argue, and then you're like, I don't have a solid base to argue against that, so I'm just gonna wait for the fuck. I'm gonna play +1 for now, but it's like, it's too gray. You cannot argue with them. It's like, oh, damn.
And that's another case, very similar to the situation I ran into, where you're looking at, like, well, I think this is what they meant, and it's likely what they meant, but if you really wanna, you know,
Ben.
Play with the wording, you can make it mean a lot of different things, right? So, because it's ambiguous, like you said.
There's a couple of things like that are ambiguous. So,
which is funny, with an 8-page rule set, how the heck do you have so many ambiguous rules?
Yeah, it's not clear enough. Like, it's funny that with the thing about the about cover, like I listened to like Kanhammer, and like I said, the guys at the Abyss, 5 guys, 5 different answers, and like 2 guys on Kanhammer last episode, like they don't get into an argument, but they disagreed on something. Like he said something about like a runes, and it works like that. And the guy goes, no, it doesn't work like that. it's like even like competitive players, like it's still great for them. Like they still disagree on things. Like, man, that's the classic like lax wording of a Games Workshop.
That's what they're known for.
Right? Yeah. Well, it will be fixed in time, but I mean, a lot of people will that question will arise a lot of times because people don't seem to agree, but we'll see how
but
it goes.
But they did came up with a hack on 4D1.
Yeah.
Yeah, they've already fixed quite a few things.
Yes, so. Exactly.
Here's hoping.
No, I'm hopeful. It's just weird.
Yeah. Anyone else have anything less than positive to say?
Well, the way they streamline a lot of things also means, and it's not a complaint from me, but a complaint I heard from several sources, that the game has lost a lot of flavor. Like if you think like how Chaos worked now, it used to like it lost a lot of identity.
Yeah, but I assume we're gonna see that again when the new book comes out.
Yeah, now they just released like generic books, it's the equivalent of ravening hordes.
Yeah, it's placeholders, right?
Well,
yeah. I mean,
it's still the
chaos,
all armies, but
poor chaos. they got teased, right? Because they had that book for like, what, 3 months or something? 5 months? The Legions, the Chaos Legions book that gave them all the Legion-specific rules and made them all flavorful again, finally, after editions of nothing. And then it's yanked out from under them. So I feel kind of bad for them. But I can only assume that'll come back in when the real books are released.
Yeah. No, I don't really mind. I think it's just baggage from previous editions. But yes, you have lost a bit of your identity. But
yeah,
it doesn't really bug me.
Well, it doesn't really affect you either, I don't think. You know, your nids are still as tasty and delicious.
Yeah, well, nids is a real problem. Orcs, I mean, clans were a big thing, but you don't really... It doesn't really matter now, the clans. Just for the special... If you include special characters, their buff might not apply to everyone if you include too many special characters. But that's pretty much it.
Well, it's like I had a Deathwing army, but Deathwing doesn't really exist anymore. I can still play the army. I just take the detachment that's all the elite choices or whatever. And I field it. But every army can do that now. it's not quite the same. So I get that. But at least they didn't invalidate anything. So I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's really the only thing I found. The rulebook is well made. The pricing on the indexes was very good, I thought. The starter box, I think, is a great value for the quality of models that are in it and the quantity.
And it was sweet packaging also, like super fancy. Yeah. Have you opened a Darker Imperium box?
Yeah, I have one.
And it's a well-designed box. Like, you felt special opening it.
It's Apple. It's Apple-ized. The one thing I could say is I think a sub-$70 slimmer rulebook would be appreciated. But that undoubtedly will be coming. There'll be more box sets, more
and you have real smaller dice starters in the box set.
The little white dice. You have these red crystal dice.
Oh, yeah, they went.
I was all surprised.
I use that to point out like a model that I've lost for moral. Looks great. I use that. Them only for that. So
because they look different, right? Yeah. You don't grab them by accident. Yeah, absolutely. I was using dice. I was using different dice for that last time I played too. The problem was the 3-year-old daughter was picking the dice up off the table to play with them. Like Guillaume and I would be looking at something, and she'd sneak up on the other side of the table and be like, "Yoink!" And I come back. Did that tank get hit? Didn't I have wounds on that? Yeah. Where did they go? And the next thing I hear the die rolling in the next room, like, sticky fingers.
If it counts, I also like the fact that when they release the indexes, they regroup it some armies. So I play Orcs and Nids, so I was like, hey, one book, it covers my armies.
I think the launch went well. I think the product is pretty good. I think 40K, the way I like to play it, is back. I'm not a competitive player in any game I play. I'm not a tournament player. It's just not my scene. Tournaments make me angry, so I don't do them. So I think for now, at least, things are looking up. We'll have to see what the future holds, but I think it started off on the right foot.
I agree.
And everyone else is asleep. So on that note, we should probably stop rambling. it's close to midnight. Steve should have been in bed 2 hours ago. Antoine is sick as a dog. So I think we should wrap this up. Guys, I just want to thank you for coming on. And thank you for taking the time to play the game. Those of you who aren't particularly interested, like Steve and Antoine, who were not 40K players in recent years. And so I appreciate the fact
that... I have tons of models, as I discovered.
I got tons of models for Malifaux. It doesn't mean I play it, right?
Yeah.
So I appreciate the fact that you're willing to dig that crap out of your closet and put it on the table and roll some dice with me. Antoine, you know, had to force himself to play an army he hates. Poor guy.
But I still have hope because everything is not back into the closet yet, so.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll play some more games, right?
Yeah.
It's a fun, especially I could see this being fun team play.
Mm-hmm.
Right, like a group game, you know, everyone brings 1,000 points. Play 2,000 versus 2,000. I see that being a great way to play this game. Should be a lot of fun. I have high hopes, as the song goes. All right, folks. I think we should call it quits. Gentlemen, it's been a pleasure as always.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Your input is always appreciated. Antoine, I'll see you in a few days for the news.
Sure.
All right. Take care, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye, geeks.
Thanks for listening to Geeks of the North. If you want to contact us, you can email us at geeksofthenorth@gmail.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/geeksofthenorth, or follow us on Twitter at Geeks of the North. You can follow me, Paul, at PRFilio, Antoine at Eltonio Berg, Steve at B_Steve, and if you really feel the need, I guess you can follow Yom. He's at Yomasta. Breaks and outro music by Ladrave. You can listen to them at ladrave.bandcamp.com. See you next time, geeks.
Thank you for checking out a United Geeks Network family member. If you enjoyed it and are looking for other online media with a geek culture slant, head over to unitedgeeksnetwork.com, where you will find Two Bald Geeks, a podcast by two bald horror movie fans that dissect one horror movie a month, saving the spoilers for last. The United Geeks Network. You can broadcast your geekiness at unitedgeeksnetwork.com.